Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. In this podcast, we tackle the tough, often unspoken realities of motherhood, neurodiversity, and mental health. Hello and welcome to ADHD Mums. Today we have another episode in the school series, and that is When School Stops Being Safe. And it's such a massive issue. Of course, I have Millie Carr with me back again. How are you, Millie?
Good, Jane. How are you?
Good, good. I'm not going to go into who Millie is because if you've listened to the school series, you will know who she is. She has lots of episodes that she's done already and she's got a couple more to come in the series. You can also find her on Instagram and on her website, which I'll put in the show notes. One thing that I love talking about with Millie is school safety, particularly with those internalizing children as well. They are often missed. I was wondering if we just jump right in, what does it actually look like when a school stops being emotionally or psychologically safe for a neurodivergent child?
For the child, you can start seeing subtle signs before it really hits ahead, I think, a lot of the time. The stomach ache one is a really big one, and some listeners may be really aware of that happening to their own child. It happened to my child as well. So the stomach aches and feeling sick. I don't want to go to school because I have a stomach ache and I'm feeling sick. It's outwardly showing, but they're not quite aware of like why that's actually happening. They actually really think it's a stomach ache. And then you get home, you pick that up from school, you get home and they're actually completely fine. Things like fatigue and increased fatigue, and they're just like not having energy anymore to do any of the things that they love or anything that gives them joy. You might have things like they're wanting to stay home and we're having that school, I guess, I don't like to say refusal. I like to say it's like that school can't, where they're just like, I can't go. I just cannot deal with this at all anymore. And they just don't feel like they can be themselves. I think all of these, you can have some explosive reactions as well, as you can have some of these more quiet, subtle kind of reactions. So when you start seeing those subtle ones, they tend to happen a little bit before you get the really big shutdown. And it shouldn't have to happen where you get to the point where they have a giant big meltdown at school for everyone to understand and jump on board and acknowledge it. But that's generally what happens because we're missing those little smaller kind of signs that are happening throughout the school day. Yeah, the feeling sick, needing water, wanting to go sit in the library and be tired. All of those things are your nervous system really showing. I'm struggling and I'm not feeling like I can be myself and I'm holding it all together. And all of that stuff starts to show in little, small, tiny things or really big outward bursts as well. So it depends on how your child reacts. If they could have some giant big fight reactions as well, where they're really throwing stuff, screaming, refusing to do any work. There's some other things that you might see as well when the environment isn't feeling safe or they're not being catered to appropriately.
That is a great description to start with. What are some of the hidden forms of harm then that kids experience at school that often just go off the radar? Like the kids are showing these signs, but you're like, but there's no reason for that. What would be some of the hidden things that maybe parents miss?
So a lot of the time, the reason these things are happening are their sensory needs are not being catered for in the classroom. They're maybe being made to sit for 3 hours straight without a break or on the floor. Some teachers will make the kids sit on the floor with their legs crossed for about 30 plus minutes while they're doing, we call them a mini lesson or the first explicit teach. The kids are sitting there on the floor with their legs crossed and they're able to do that for the 30, 40 minutes they're making them do that. They're able to hold it together, push through and do that. But it wears you down to something that you wouldn't think because you're kind of like, oh, I just did my lesson. All of a sudden they lost it. Well, they didn't just lose it. They've been sitting there for 40 minutes and then there's a very valid reason why they might do that. Maybe the work is not pitched at their level. So maybe the work in general, there's no differentiation where the students are catered to based on where they're at and they're given a task and it is way too hard for them or way too easy either way. And then you're going to find if it's not pitched at their level and they're able to access that learning, they are going to struggle and they're either going to say, I can't do it. I'm going to go to the toilet. The stomach issues happen. Again, all of these reactions happen when these things are going on and the teacher's not aware. They're like, oh, again, I sent them off to do their work and then all of a sudden they lost it. But it wasn't all of a sudden they lost it. It was that maybe they sat too long. Maybe they don't understand the task. Maybe someone socially at school, there's some social issues at school, which again, you don't know about because maybe it's happening outside and they're bringing it in with them. So all of these things are little tiny, small things. Maybe they're made to sit and on the floor when they can't sit on the floor. Maybe they're not able to access something to allow them to have their needs met, like a sensory fidget tool or a device instead of writing. There's not options. So they're having to do this one way every day. Some kids can do it, for a few months and then they start to lose it. Some kids can't even do it that day. So I think that's what you're talking about, Jane, in terms of they're the things that are happening that are then causing these reactions that no one's really aware of why it's happening. But if you dig a bit deeper and you actually look and go, oh, hold up, it happened after 40 minutes of sitting on the floor with their legs crossed, looking at the teacher. I would struggle to sit for 40 minutes on the floor listening to someone speak. So yeah, they're the kind of little tiny things that I think build and work towards school not feeling safe because they can't really be themselves in these moments. They're not being catered to and people aren't understanding them enough to know that they need different work or that they can't sit for that long or they need different support. So that kind of all comes together to then create those other responses that we spoke about in the first question.
And it can be really hard as a parent to piece that together, of course, because I mean, wouldn't it be easier if your child was able to just come to you and say, I'm feeling like this because of this? But you don't even know what you're dealing with and you're not there.
They don't know. The students, they wouldn't be able to verbalize. I sat for 40 minutes on the floor looking at the teacher and then I got really fidgety and then I felt like I had to get some control back and that's why I did this. They can't verbalize it. And they often go, I don't know. I don't know. They have no idea. And they say, I don't know. I don't know. And the teacher's not going to tell you in a parent meeting, oh, I made them sit on the floor for 40 minutes and then the reaction happened. It seems really like impossible to figure out what's happening and why.
Oh, completely. And it's really tricky. I think you've made some really good points there because it's really hard to see. And even just getting those examples is a good start. What about when, for example, a parent is seeing some of those hidden things, some of those things that you're thinking, oh, that might be contributing to it. I know at home, making them sit to do this triggers off a reaction. Maybe it's around sitting. Let's say you can start to see some red flags. And then maybe you go to the school and you say, hey, how long are you sitting on the ground for? Because I noticed that my child really struggles with that. If we do that at home, they usually start hitting a sibling or they're doing something or they're running in rings. How can you address that without being dismissed as, well, they all do that, so they should be, or you're a difficult parent? Like, how can you get around that kind of thing?
Sometimes it depends on the teacher. Individual teachers will welcome feedback and will welcome that. So if you come to a teacher that is more open and able to reflect on their own practice, they'll be like, oh, I didn't notice that they were doing that. That makes a bit of sense why that might be happening. I'll try and modify this and see if we see it change. And you may get a teacher like that. And that's probably a rare, probably occurrence for some people. But then the teachers that are going to be dismissive, I would not come in accusing them of doing that. This is like anyone, if someone comes to you with something and it sounds like you're being attacked or accused, they're going to react in the same kind of manner and they're going to shut down or say no or call you a difficult parent. So you want to be investigative. So not actually accusing. You can think that maybe that might be the issue, the fact that they're sitting on the floor too long. What I would recommend to do, and this is what I do is a part of my role in my school, I do a lot of observations of teachers for different reasons. So if there is a student or a child that something is happening, so even if it's at home and they go home and we're trying to figure out what's building up, what's making their kind of like bottle explode at the end of the day or during the day, I try and go in and I usually observe and I would encourage, so having a meeting with the teacher and also someone else from leadership, and I would recommend going, I kind of want to investigate what the triggers are and what's happening. And I'd love someone to come in and just watch what she does and watch her reactions and try and pinpoint some of the things that might be happening. And maybe the leadership person comes in for about an hour and watches and writes down everything that's said to the student, what the student does, what the teacher does, all of it. Like I'm talking absolutely everything, because you never quite know what the actual trigger is. And until you actually see that kind of data, sometimes teachers don't realize that they're doing it either. I had to do this last year with a teacher. She couldn't quite realize why the student wouldn't go, once they finished floor time, wouldn't go to the task and go and start the task. There was always a massive transition issue and they struggled. And I came in and did the observation. Again, they were on the floor for way too long. I could see that he was starting to get fidgety. You could see it. He was fidgeting. He was moving. He was trying to get up, but he wasn't allowed to. He was holding it all in. Then he finally got up and he lost the actual activity time. And I was able to show the teacher the data of what I saw. This is what I saw. This is what he was doing. Do you think maybe if we cut like our lesson down a little bit, it might be a little bit easier? Or these are the signs that he's starting to get dysregulated. When you see those, these are the things that you can do. So I would come at it, we're exploring what it might be. I notice at home when we're doing this is what happens. I'd love to just get you to maybe for a day get someone to come in and observe what they're doing and maybe focus it on the child, not on the teacher, but the teacher stuff will come up. it comes up in the observation. So I would actually ask for potentially an observation and some note taking of like the behaviors throughout the day to see where the dysregulation could be coming from. It could be that every time after lunch, they come in and they were fine before they went out for lunch. And then after lunch, that's when you start seeing some of the dysregulation. And then we can go, okay, what can we do about lunchtime? Something at lunchtime might be triggering it. So I'd be trying to ask them to investigate what's happening throughout the day. And then that data is going to pinpoint some little points that you might be able to start tweaking and changing rather than going in saying, you're making my child sit on the floor too long. They can't sit on the floor that long. You're going to get a teacher kind of arc up and be a little bit upset about that. So I'd be really investigative and say, this is what we notice when we're at home. Do you notice that too? Can we get someone else to maybe come in and see what she's doing? I want to see where it might be going a little bit different at school. So that's my recommendation, is to try and keep it a little less aggressive with these things, because teachers can get really upset and you don't want to be the difficult parent. You want to come in and work with the teacher about how can we solve this together rather than put them on the wrong, I guess, foot.
I was thinking when you were talking, I might put in the show notes the Gottman theory. Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
So if anyone who doesn't know, the Gottman theory is like couples counseling, but it's when you're approaching an issue with a partner, you don't go for the jugular. Like, you never help me. I always have to do it myself. That's not a great startup. You want to be going along the lines of, hey, I've been noticing me feeling really overwhelmed lately. How can we work together? So just thinking that, I might put in the show notes the Gottman theory, because if you are unsure when you're feeling emotional, what a soft startup would be, they've got some great free resources on their website. And it's a really great skill to learn for anyone, just dealing with any person. Mm-hmm. I learn a lot from the Gottman theory, just around less sledgehammer-like ways of speaking to people, which is my go-to.
It can be hard because you are emotional. It's your child that's having difficulties and you want to help them. But if you can remember those things before you go in, like you said, Jane, and you can think about it and rephrase what you're doing, and you might be right about what could be the issues, but you don't want to go in there and just flat out say that. You want to get them to come to the realization that maybe that could be the problem, and they'll be more likely to make some changes and support you than if you come at them like really accusatory and just they're sitting on the floor for too long. They probably really are. A lot of kids are, and that can set them off. But rather than accuse, let's just go in there and try and come to the conclusion together. And someone from leadership could come in and actually support them to do that as well. Could observe the student while the teacher's teaching. The teacher can't observe the student because they're teaching and they're concentrating on teaching. You can't really see everything when you're teaching. So getting someone else, an outsider, to come in and do that observation is probably the best strategy and recommendation I'd give.
What about for mums who feel, I mean, I think all of us have sat in the car after a drop-off and not felt good about it and had that feeling of, am I doing the right thing? Should I run in and get my baby? You have that protective response, but you don't know whether pushing through or pulling out is a better path forward. Yeah. But I suppose it's a funny question because it's different for everybody. But do you think there's a line between pushing through and pulling out? Like, is there any generic line that we could talk about?
I don't think pushing through just for the sake of saying that they're attending school is beneficial for anybody. You need to figure out the root reason behind what's going on. All behavior is communication. We know that. So if they're refusing to go to school, they're refusing to go in the classroom. I've been working with a parent recently that has their daughter in prep, is refusing to actually get into the classroom. She has to literally carry her and throw her in there. And they have a box of fidgets in the corner and they put her over there in the corner with these box of fidgets and then just to run out because the teacher's made her run out really quickly. Traumatic for everybody involved, traumatic for her daughter, traumatic for her. And then the teacher as well has to deal with, again, this crying child. I think we need to actually figure out what the root reason is behind it and have a soft plan of how we're going to get this kind of thing to happen. And you can do things where you need to come up with the school. I would do a little bit of a team approach again where you're having a meeting and have a bit of an engagement plan where you've got some things in place, like what's the transition going to look like? How can we make the transition less stressful? Can it be that we have like a transition job that they do, a transition connection time with the teacher before they actually transition over? Is it that we cut down their days for the start and we make it a little bit less demanding so it's not the whole school day? We shorten some days or something. It potentially could be that they're needing a little bit more of that connection with you at home to feel safe to go as well and have that connection with the teacher. So they're all the things that you want to think about. You want to think about them with all of the staff. You need to have a meeting. You can't just keep dropping them off and then just saying we have to And schools might say, oh, you have to just let them go, let them cry, let them deal with it. That's not going to actually help. It's going to cause a lot of trauma in the long run. So I think you need to actually step back and forget about academics for a little bit, make a plan about their well-being and make some connection activities to that drop-off. If they're having trouble going into school, let's figure out what the reasons are and try and solve some of that stuff with what we talked about in the last question as well, doing some observations and stuff, but let's try and figure out the problem. I don't think we should just throw kids in there and let that trauma continue, because you're not going to get them to like school if that's what you're doing every single day. And you're doing that every single day for the entire year. That's not going to get us in any nice, safe place and make them feel really well and really good about school. And they're probably going to shut down after that point and they're not doing anything the rest of the day anyway. So they're just sitting there doing nothing but completely dysregulated and then have trauma that you've just like dumped them at this place that they're not feeling very good. So I would recommend doing some of those things, having a meeting and coming up with an engagement plan to get them to school, but not force them. You want to encourage them. You want them to take the lead, get them to co-create some of this stuff. And then some of the ideas come from them as well, because they're not going to do it unless they've been part of it.
Yeah, I think it's a great point. Sometimes I struggle to problem solve with my kids, and ever since I just started asking them what I should do, it's like I don't even have to do all the decision-making and the thinking because they'll just do it for me. And their youngest one is six. He's got his own problem-solving that he can do, which is usually a lot better than what I can think of. So throwing it out to the child, I think, is a great point, no matter their age, about what would help them, because it might be simpler than what you think.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just trialing different things and creating a plan with them. You can't just keep ignoring it and say, oh, they're just doing it to manipulate you, or they're not doing it to be difficult behavior. There's reasons behind behavior, and we've got to dig deeper and figure out what the reason is rather than just keep forcing them to go to school just for the sake. And look, ultimately, Jane, as well, it may be that environment. No matter what you've done, you may do all of these things and that just may not be the right environment for them, and you might have to seek some different alternative options, which I know you and I have both done with our kids over the past as well. So after you try everything and you work together as a team, that may be not the best environment for your child. And if it's continuing and you can't quite figure out what it is, it might be that you have to try and think of a different solution as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. Last question before we finish up. Let's say we have a situation where you feel that the relationship between you and the school is broken. The trust has been broken somewhere. If we wanted to stay at that school, and we did have that breakdown of the relationship, what are some things we can do to repair?
Yeah, it needs both parties to be on the same page though. So if you want to stay at the school, and obviously the reason that you've got is maybe potentially other siblings, or if it's really traumatic, it might be that you can't stay there. Like there's no repair sometimes from some relationships. But some people, I think you need to start working together and say, I want to try something, and can we trust each other to try some things together so that we're on the same page? Because if you can't get on the same page again and you can't actually find any solution, you're not going to be able to build that trust up again. You've got to believe that the staff really care about your child, and they've got to show you that as well. So hopefully the school are coming to you saying, we want to try and help and find a solution. We're not just trying to dismiss you or just fob you off and get rid of you. If they're coming, they need to come to you with that kind of, we care about your child, we want what's best for your child, and we're going to try and keep helping you. If they're saying that, then you can, I think, repair that relationship, and you can repair and create, again, like a plan that you're all part of. If you're coming, though, to them and they're not really open to that and you don't feel that they actually care about your child, personally, I would struggle to continue and be able to make that trusting relationship. But hopefully depends on the different school, and you can't really obviously make a school act the way you want them to act either. So you can see what they're doing and take their actions for where your decision goes next. If they're coming to you with that want to help and you really believe that's what they want to do, you can rebuild that trust, I think. But it depends on how the school's coming at you, and you need to, again, come into it in a more inquiry type of way rather than really aggressive as well, because a lot of teachers really do want to help kids. Like, it's very rare that people just don't want to help anyone at all. Most do want to help. So hopefully you'll get someone like that's willing to listen and listen to what you're saying, but you need to come at them not really aggressive, because you're going to put people off if you do that. So come to them with a curious kind of question and curious about what you could do so that you can work together and build that trust up again and listen to each other about what's needed, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. And if you've come in maybe a little bit too emotionally,
because we're all emotional about our children, maybe say, hey, look, I'm sorry, maybe my tone, maybe what I said, I've really reflected on that. I love my child and I think maybe take responsibility for whatever part you've played, even if you think it was 99% their fault, just take responsibility for that 1%, because for me, as soon as I do that, most people will then come and say, hey, I think I probably could have handled that better too. Next thing you know, you've got an apology on your lap. But whether you went first or not, maybe that doesn't matter to you. It doesn't matter to me. I'll apologize for my 1% without saying it's 1%.
Yeah.
Get an apology from the other side and rebuild.
Yeah.
Even if I think it's completely their fault, often starting with accepting responsibility for something you did afterwards is always a good start. But I agree with you. If it's not going to work and you feel in your gut it isn't and you feel like the care just isn't there, even if you've tried to repair it, it might be time to go.
But
it's a really personal decision, isn't it, that kind of repair place?
Yeah, because what we've talked about, coming into it the way we're coming in, and but we can't control what the school do, and I can't control everyone who's listening now has different experiences, and we can't control the leadership and the teachers at their school. So hopefully they will come at, like we're talking about, they'll come at it with that care and understanding and want to apologise for their part and work together and build again. That's fabulous. If you've got that's really great, and you can start to build from that with some of the suggestions I've talked about previously. But if you find that they're not coming to the party like that, I think, and this is my personal opinion, I would have to just probably step away for the benefit of my child, because it's not going to get better and they're going to just keep getting the same treatment and the same responses.
Particularly if you're dealing with leadership team, because there's nowhere else to go. If you're not getting that from a leadership team, there's not a lot of where to go, really.
You can complain higher to the education department, and we've talked about that in previous episodes too, about going higher if you're finding that it's not good enough. But ultimately, at the end of the day, we can't change people, and like, you can change your actions and be in control of your actions, but we can't change others' actions. And you can do those things and go forward and maybe write a complaint if that's what's needed. But is that environment, if you write the complaint, is it still going to get better? And are they going to have that care for your child? Probably not. So I'd be making just some decisions of different alternatives that, which are hard. I know it's really hard that we have to make decisions sometimes because the system isn't set up right and appropriately for all students. We have to make decisions to take our children out of a school that is an easier option for us to be able to make sure their well-being is better. At the end of the day, as parents, we make those decisions because we care about our children and their well-being. But hopefully they come to the party like we've talked about, so you can rebuild that trust.
Yeah, perfect. Look, thank you so much for your time, Millie. It's been such a pleasure, as always. If you'd like to check out more about Millie, check in the show notes for her other episodes that she's done, also her Instagram and her website. She's got some great books. But thank you so much for your time, Millie. It's been great.
Thanks so much, Jane. Always a pleasure.
Quick announcement. Did you know that we have an ADHD month shop filled with resources designed just for you? These resources are packed with answers to the most frequently asked questions I get sent in via email. Everything from understanding ADHD and autism to practical tips for daily life. There's also a free assessment tool. If you're wondering about ADHD or autism for yourself or your little one, don't forget to check out the free assessment tool under free resources section on my website, adhdmums.com.au.